If there was nothing to hide, then there should be no problem. You should be willing to distribute your material for anybody to work on. And when it's when you keep it tight, then you suspect that there's why is this the case?
One thing is sure. Thanks to this limited study, Monsanto's GMOs have inundated the world, principally in North and South America, Asia, and Australia. After only 10 years, transgenic crops now cover 250 million acres. 70% are Roundup resistant, and 30% have been genetically modified to produce an insecticide called BT. Since 2001, the company has published a yearly document titled The Pledge Report, a kind of ethics statement in which Monsanto tries to justify its business practices. At the heart of the opposition to GMOs is the subject of patents. This is what Monsanto calls their intellectual property, which are supposed to protect their investment. In North America, every farmer who buys bioengineered seeds must sign a technology agreement in which the farmer promises to respect the company's patent on the modified gene.
Biotech crops are protected by U.S. patent law, and so I may not in any way save seed to replant the following year. It's something that is a protection for Monsanto, for biotech companies, because they literally invest millions and millions of dollars to produce this new technology.
And how can Monsanto know that someone, for instance, replant harvested seeds?
I'm not sure how to answer that. No, how they would know if someone replanted seed. That's a good question for Monsanto.
The question is so touchy that Monsanto prefers to circumvent it by making glorious promises. In cases of unintended appearance of our proprietary varieties on a farmer's field, we will surely work to resolve the matter to the satisfaction of both the farmer and Monsanto. The reality seems much less idyllic. The Center for Food Safety in Washington, D.C. published a study on farmers sued by Monsanto for having not respected its seed patents. It found at least 100 lawsuits and many bankruptcies. Among the victims, Troy Rush, an Indiana farmer.
Our story starts back in 1999. A gentleman, and I use that term loosely, showed up at my mother and father's farm, and he claimed to be a private investigator hired by Monsanto. And he was out investigating farmers saving their own seed, and asked us, he'd come right out and ask us if we'd saved their seed. And we told him no, we had not, and offered up our herbicide purchases and seed purchases, all the receipts and everything, told him where everything was purchased so he could go check it out for himself. He declined that offer. And what occurred is then they sued us. Monsanto filed a lawsuit against myself, my father, and my two brothers. And Monsanto presented us with documents that they claimed were samples taken from our farms. To obtain those samples, Monsanto had to have trespassed upon our land without our permission and stole those samples. That year, I recall we had 492 acres of Roundup Ready soybeans. And they were growing under contract for a company for seed. And the contract was very specific. It spelled out the specific fields, so it wasn't a problem in isolating those fields. Everybody knew it.
And why did you settle out of court with Monsanto?
Well, after 2.5 years of this, the family was just destroyed. The stress involved in this, I mean, they're in essence threatening 5 generations of work. And if they were to prevail in something like this, it's all gone. They take it all away. They take it all away.
Good morning.
Morning, sir.
How are you this morning, Troy?
I'm well. How are you, David?
Still surviving?
Good.
Troy Roush and David Runyon grow conventional soybeans. They have been victims of the so-called gene police. Created by Monsanto to enforce its law in the fields, the gene police sow fear in rural America, where farmers denounce the totalitarian methods used in a GMO-dominated world.
I have some pictures here for you, Troy, I'd like you to look at.
Okay.
Here's what I have done, Troy, to help prevent re-entry on my farm. Of anyone coming onto my farm. Summer, it was in July of 2003, and they came, it was the latter part of July, they came to my house. It was like 7 p.m.
Who came?
Monsanto employees. And they presented me a business card. And they asked me a few questions about the kind of soybeans I plant, the kind of corn I plant, where I market my crops. And so I said, okay, that's the end of the conversation.
Yeah, patents have changed. They've changed everything.
It revolves with a relationship of trust with neighbors. That is gone. By myself, I probably only have 2 farmers that I talk to that are close to me.
Are they really afraid, the farmers?
Of course they're afraid. You can't defend yourself against these people. They've created a little industry that serves no other purpose than to wreck farmers' lives. Of course they're afraid.
That means that you're afraid, for instance, that the neighbor can snitch on you?
Yes.
Yes?
Yeah.
Yes.
All you have to do is
dial 1-800.
Dial 1-800-MONSANTO. Or no, I'm sorry, 1-800-ROUNDUP. I remember encouraging farmers to call this toll-free number and turn their neighbor in.
And why does Monsanto do that?
Well, the reason they do it is control.
Seeds?
Yeah. They want to control the seed. They want to own life. I mean, this is the building blocks of food we're talking about. They are in the process of owning food. All food.
Between 1995 and 2005, Monsanto acquired over 50 seed companies throughout the world. These companies produce corn, cotton, wheat, and soybean, and also seeds for tomatoes, potatoes, and sorghum. Everywhere, people worry about Monsanto's monopoly, which in the long term threatens to wipe out all non-transgenic varieties. Monsanto doesn't agree and speaks only about the benefits of biotechnology, especially in developing countries like India. Our products provide significant economic benefits to both large and small growers. In many cases, farmers are able to grow higher quality and better yielding crops. India is the world's third largest cotton producer. In 1999, Monsanto acquired Mahico, the country's leading seed company. 2 years later, the Indian government authorized the sale of BT cotton under the brand name Balgard. It is genetically modified to produce an insecticide which repels bollworms, a cotton parasite.
A Monsanto TV commercial that aired in India featuring animated puppets. Day and night, all day, every day, Bollgard protects you. That's the power of Bollgard. Less pesticide, higher profits.
Since 2001, Kiran Sakari and Abdul Gayam have been closely following the transgenic cotton grown by small farmers in the Warangal district. Every year, the two agronomists publish a report comparing bioengineered cotton with conventional cotton in terms of yields and production costs. In 2006, the harvest was ravaged by a disease that affects transgenic cotton.
This is a Bollgard field. We can see some of the Rhizoctonia affected plants. You see, if you remove the bark of a healthy plant, it won't be like this, like threats. See, it's a classic example of rajoctonia infestation.
The farmers, they have said they have never seen that. And when we were doing our study from 2001, we have noted this disease on very few samples in the BT cotton only. And as the time passed, the spread was seen more and more in the BT fields as well as some non-BT fields also. But I personally feel that there may be some interaction, undesirable interaction, between the host plant where the gene was introduced and the gene which is carrying the BT. And that has introduced the weakness in the plant to not to resist this rhizoctonia.
I have seen the website of the Monsanto. BT cotton reduces 78% of the pesticide reduction, pesticide consumption, and it gives you 30% better yields. But it's an utter flop. After 90 days, you invariably have to spray for bollworm, even on the BT cotton.
How do you explain that so many farmers are buying BT seeds?
See, presently the option is is getting narrow and narrow to the farmer. During the current season, even farmer wanted to go for non-BT, there was no non-BT hybrid seed available in the market.
Today in India, Monsanto controls nearly all of the cottonseed market, forcing the locals to buy its seeds at prices four times higher than conventional varieties. Small farmers must turn to moneylenders who charge high interest rates. If the harvest is poor, it means bankruptcy, a vicious circle which is decimating Indian villages.
On screen, a funeral procession is taking place in an Indian village. Why did he commit suicide? The harvest was lousy. BT cotton? Yes, BT cotton. Was there another reason? Debts. How old was he? 25. He drank a liter of pesticide. Was it the first suicide? No, the second.
Tragedies like the one we've just witnessed occur three times a day in the Vidarbha region, where BT cotton was introduced in 2005. Of course, cotton farmers committing suicide is not new in India, but the GM crops are causing it to skyrocket. However, in this battle that pits David against Goliath, few dare to publicly denounce this international scandal.
Kishore Tiwan, local farm activist.
This is Vidarbha's rice-growing belt. So if you see, the minimum suicides are there. But this is the cotton-growing area. The result of the BT cotton is the first year 600 suicides from June 2005 to 2006. Second year, still today, within 6 months, 680 suicides. So it's a disaster.
It's a complete disaster, yes.
Tarakate, agronomist.
All these technologies, either it is GM or biotechnology, they're actually making the farmers completely dependent on the market. Because not only that, you have to pay more for the seed procurement, but you have to fertilize. And this very claim that no spraying is required, no pesticide required, is also false.
When Monsanto claims in advertising that GM crops are adapted for small farmers, what do you think it's?
Our experience shows that it is completely false. It's completely false. It's a lie.
On this day in December of 2006, a revolt was brewing in the largest cotton market in the state of Maharashtra. 3 days later, riots broke out and dozens of small farmers, including Kishore Tiwari, were arrested.
The price they're paying is a lot lower, and all the farmers are troubled and worried. How much money have you borrowed?
60,000 rupees a day. 50,000 rupees a day. 20,000 rupees a day. 50,000 rupees a day. 15,000 rupees a day.
Who will stop growing BT cotton next year? The crowd of farmers raise their hands.
Seeds of Suicide is the title of a book by physicist Vandana Shiva. She won the Alternative Nobel Prize and heads the Navdana organization, which aims to conserve traditional seeds. In the beginning, Vandana Shiva's battle was against the first Green Revolution, which brought industrial agriculture to India in the 1960s. Today, she denounces what she calls the second Green Revolution, that of GMOs protected by patents.
The difference is that the first Green Revolution was public sector driven. It was driven by government agencies. The government agencies control the research. In the case of the second Green Revolution, it is driven by Monsanto. It is a Monsanto-driven revolution. The second big difference is that the first Green Revolution did have a hidden objective of selling more chemicals. But its first objective was providing food. It was food security. And yes, they grew less pulses, they grew less oilseeds, but they did grow more rice and wheat. It fed people. The second Green Revolution has nothing to do with food security. It's not about food security. It is about returns to Monsanto's profits. That's all it is about. They've always said genetic engineering is the way to get to patenting, but patenting is the real aim. If you look at Monsanto's research agenda, they are testing at this point something like 20 crops with BT genes in them. There's nothing they're leaving untouched. The mustard, the okra, the brinjal, the rice, the cauliflower. Once they have established the norm that seed can be owned as their property, royalties can be collected, we will depend on them for every seed we grow, of every crop we grow. If they control seed, they control food. They know it. It's strategic. It's more powerful than bombs. It's more powerful than guns. This is the best way to control the populations of the world.
Monsanto responds to Ms. Shiva's persuasive argument by brandishing its pledge, integrity, dialogue, transparency, and sharing.
We want to participate constructively in the process by which societies around the world try to develop good answers to those questions. Are the products going to be safe for the environment?
Robert Shapiro, Monsanto CEO, 1993 to 2000.
How are they going to affect biodiversity? How are they going to affect other plants and insects and birds? What about outcrossing of genes? What happens if genes do outcross into wild species? To me, that means, among other things, listening carefully and respectfully to all points of view.
Despite Robert Shapiro's placid demeanor, he has just touched on a subject that greatly troubles GMO opponents, transgenic contamination, which Monsanto prefers to call an adventitious presence that's part of the natural order. According to a study led by Berkeley professor Dr. Ignacio Chapela, GMOs have already contaminated Mexican corn. But when the scientific journal Nature published the study's findings, it triggered a violent controversy.
I had been working for 15 years with indigenous communities in Oaxaca, in Mexico, and they had been developing the capacity to analyze their environment themselves. One of my students went to try and train people to detect transgenics. We brought with ourselves a positive control that was a can of corn from the US that we knew was transgenic, and we were looking for a negative control, and we thought the best negative control is going to be corn from the local places, because we all believed that was the cleanest, the most well-preserved source of corn in the world. So the surprise came when we looked at these samples and we discovered that the samples that we all believed would be non-transgenic had already transgenic DNA within them. It was a very big surprise for us to discover that these land races of corn that were kept by people locally and supposedly maintained over 10,000 years had already been reached by transgenic contamination, mostly from the US.
Mexico is the center of origin for corn. More than 150 local corn varieties can be found in just the southern region of Oaxaca. This extensive biodiversity is a treasure, the world's genetic reservoir of corn. Millions of Mexican farmers have maintained it for thousands of years.
This corn is for the family?
Yes, only for the family. We use it to make tortillas.
Segundino, Oaxacan farmer.
This year is a good size, so we'll save it as seed for next year's planting.
You don't buy your seeds?
No.
You exchange them?
Yes. It's our ancient barter system.
To preserve its corn's diversity, Mexico has banned genetically modified crops. However, due to the NAFTA free trade agreement it signed with the United States and Canada, Mexico cannot stop the massive importation of American corn, 40% of which is genetically modified. This industrial corn, as it's called in Mexico, is highly subsidized by the U.S. government. So on local markets, it costs half as much as traditional Mexican corn.
Do you always make your tortillas with local corn?
Yes.
It's natural and has a better yield. Also, it's more nourishing because it comes from pure soil. That's blue corn. In the past, my ancestors only planted this kind of corn. Today, we maintain it as well.
It existed before the Spanish conquest.
Yes. There's another kind of conquest.
What's the new conquest?
It's the transgenic conquest that wants to destroy everything by making local corn disappear so that their industrial corn can dominate. If they succeed, we'll be dependent on multinationals. We'll be forced to buy the fertilizer and insecticides they sell, because without them, their corn won't grow. Whereas the local corn grows very well without fertilizer or herbicide. Look at it. It's very beautiful.
Ignacio Chapela's article provoked a violent reaction in Mexico. Since then, the National Ecology Institute has confirmed the contamination of Mexican corn. Roundup Ready and BT genes have been found in corn from five regions of the country. What would happen if bioengineered corn crossed with traditional land races? Dr. Alberas Buya led a study using a local flower. She inserted the same gene in several specimens and then observed their growth.
We observed that two plants, strictly identical from a genetic point of view, in other words, they both have the same genome, the same chromosomes and the same transgene. The only difference is that the transgene is located in different places. And well, once they grew, these plants presented a phenotype. That is to say, flower shapes that were very different. Some have flowers that are identical to their natural counterparts, like here, four petals with four sepals. But others have abnormal flowers with abnormal hair or strange petals. In addition, some are completely monstrous. The only difference in all of these plants is the location of the transgene, which was inserted randomly.
Why is that worrisome?
In Mexico, once the transgenic corn seeds have been released into the environment, it's very likely that the transgenes will insert themselves into the genomes of the local Mexican varieties. It's an unavoidable phenomenon, because corn plants cross naturally by wind-blown pollen. Given that, we fear that the genetic resources of traditional corn will be uncontrollably affected.
¿Sí?
a meeting of Oaxacan farmers. Aldo Gonzalez, president of an indigenous people's organization.
Good morning. We invite you to attend a meeting about the new diseases which are infecting our corn because of transgenic contamination.
Aldo heads an organization of indigenous people. For 2 years, he's been leading an information campaign in Oaxaca communities, where Elena Alvarez's fears have already been confirmed in the fields.
I'm going to show you some photos of some corn plants that we took in our region of Sierra Juarez. We'd like to know if you have already seen this type of plant in your community. You can see that some very strange things are going on. This plant, for example, has a branch here and another one there. Normally, a corn plant is not like that. There is always only one ear per leaf. But look here. There are three ears coming out of the same leaf. They are really monsters. We sent a plant sample to a biotech lab to see if maybe it contained genetically modified genes. Unfortunately, the test came out positive. Usually, we see these types of plants along the roadside or in people's yards. It's possible that people buy corn in the shop and they drop some kernels while walking. Some kernels germinate. This is how traditional corn became contaminated.
From what you've said, if we don't manage to stop their spread in our fields, soon we'll be forced to buy our corn seed because our own won't work anymore. That's very troubling. What should we do?
First of all, if you find a strange plant, you should immediately remove its stamen, because that's where its pollen comes from. In any case, you must be very vigilant in monitoring your plants.
Tenemos que ser más vigilantes con nuestras milpas.
Don't you think it's Monsanto's strategy, what they couldn't achieve legally, they are trying to force through contamination?
Yes, we end up wondering if the contamination wasn't intentional. If the center of origin of corn becomes contaminated, the rest of the planet could follow. Contamination only benefits multinationals like Monsanto.
How did Monsanto react to Ignacia Chapela's study on Mexican corn contamination? Monsanto's Dirty Tricks campaign against Bayard Berkeley professor Ignacio Chapela. An article by Jonathan Matthews, who heads GM Watch, a GMO information service based in southern England. According to Jonathan Matthews, Ignacio Chapela was a victim of a campaign launched on AgBioWorld, a pro-GMO internet site. On the eve of the article's publication in Nature, a certain Mary Murphy posted an email that AgBioWorld distributed to thousands of scientists around the world. She wrote, "Activists will certainly run wild with news that Mexican corn has been contaminated by genes from GM corn." The very next day, a certain Andora Smetacek posted a second email. "Activists first, scientist second."
It's totally a smear campaign.
John Matthews, president, GM Watch.
This is what happens over the first couple of days. You get Murphy and Smetacek coming in, then others come in and they say, we have to campaign on this. We have to inundate Nature. We have to go to the editor of the journal and we have to say this research isn't valid. Smetacek and Murphy, we'd been tracking them for some time and trying to work out who they were. In the case of Smetacek, we could look at the technical headers on the email. It says received from, and then we've got an internet protocol address. If we go off to a website registration site. Now, all we have to do is just to copy that IP address. Organization name, Monsanto Company, and based in St. Louis. Then Mary Murphy left behind details that enabled us to track who she was. So if we look here at the information that appeared, posted by Mary Murphy, and then we get the IP address, bw6.bivwood.com. When we found that that was the original name of a PR agency called the Bivings Group, we quickly found out that on their client list was Monsanto, that this was an internet PR firm for Monsanto.
That means fake scientists. What a dirty tricks.
Yeah, no, we're talking very dirty tricks here. Yeah, I mean, there's no ethics at all in what's going on here. It shows an organization that is determined to push its products into countries around the world, and it's determined to destroy the reputation of anybody who stands in their way.
Jonathan Matthews' accusations were covered in the British press, but Monsanto chose to ignore them. As it continues its unrelenting rise, the company defends its vision of a transgenic world that will resolve the problems of famine and the environment in perfect harmony. Practical experience clearly demonstrates that the coexistence of biotech, conventional, and organic systems is not only possible, but is peacefully occurring around the world.
A Brazilian Monsanto commercial. The image is of children playing in a verdant yard, fishing in a lake, a pregnant woman standing by a sunny window, and smiling children in a cornfield. Imagine a world which preserves nature, the air, the water, where we could produce more with fewer chemicals, without deforestation. That's a transgenic world. A Monsanto initiative funded with the help of the Brazilian Dietetic Association.
A transgenic world already exists in South America, where 100 million acres of Roundup-ready soybeans were planted in 2007. Their conquest started 10 years ago in Argentina, the only country to have officially authorized transgenic crops. Since then, GMOs have mysteriously spread to neighboring countries like Brazil and Paraguay, seen here. In 2005, Paraguay finally legalized these smuggled crops to save their soybean exports to Europe, where labeling GMOs is obligatory. In reality, for the Ministry of Agriculture, the deed had already been done.
Roberto Franco, Deputy Secretary of Agriculture of Paraguay.
We had to authorize GMO seeds because they had already entered our country in a, let's say, unorthodox way.
Do you know how transgenic seeds enter the country? Through the black market or smuggling?
We don't speak about the black market, but about the blank sack, because these are the seed sacks that have no official markings.
Did Monsanto play a role in this seed contraband?
It is possible that the company, let's say, promoted its varieties and its seeds, and as I told you, the government had to react after the fact to authorize what was already a reality.
Whatever the origin, contraband has been profitable for Monsanto. As soon as the crops were legalized, the company obtained the right to collect royalties on each ton of soybeans the country produced. Just like in Brazil. Since then, there has been no let-up in Paraguay's deforestation and the expulsion of many small farmers who refuse to relinquish their small plots of land. Jorge Galeano leads a small farmers organization which is fighting against the progression of what he calls The Green Desert.
What we have here is an example of a GM extension of soybeans. In fact, it's a monocrop that destroys everything in its path. Before here, there were fields containing everything that a family needed to live. Plants, trees, manioc, corn.
Do you think that a GM crop can coexist with the crops of the small farmers?
No, where it can't. There are two incompatible models that can't coexist. It's a silent war that eliminates communities and families of small farmers. In addition, it destroys the biodiversity of the countryside. It brings death, poverty, and illness, as well as the destruction of the natural resources that help us live.
Today, Roundup is sprayed all over Paraguay by plane or mechanical spreaders driven by unprotected farm workers. The herbicide is sprayed right up to people's front doors or near the subsistence crops of small farmers. Every year, crops are destroyed and thousands of people contaminated. Like this family, which is surrounded by Monsanto's GMOs. The parents are worried about their son Pedro because every day he has to cross the soybean fields to sell his mother's homemade corn tortillas.
How long has he had that?
It started 15 days ago. It started on his foot and then it spread. That's how it starts.
Does he have a headache?
Is he eating?
Very little. Today he didn't want to eat what I prepared for him. He only drank a little fruit juice.
And his brother?
He eats better, but it's difficult. That's the way we live. Recently, we lost 60 ducks and geese. They took a few steps, and then they fell down, dead as doornails. They spray deadly herbicide over there. And when it rains, the water streams down here, and since ducks live in water, that's the result.
In Paraguay, 70% of the farmland is owned by only 2% of the population. With GMOs, the concentration is increasing. Three-quarters of the soybean producers are foreigners staking claims for this new green gold. The ban on animal-based feed after the mad cow epidemic and the recent biofuel craze have caused soy prices to soar, triggering a rush to Roundup-ready crops. According to the last census in Paraguay, each year 100,000 people leave rural areas to live in urban slums. An estimated 70% flee Monsanto's genetically modified soybeans, which are destined to feed Europe's chickens, cows, and pigs.
A meeting of small farmers.
We are going to talk about the production model of GM soybeans promoted by Monsanto. It's a true multinational company. It's everywhere in the world. Its objective is to control all of the world's food production through farmerless farming. The result is that Monsanto is depriving us of our food sovereignty, of our ability to feed ourselves without depending on anyone else. That is why we say that we must fight for our independence, for our land. We must defend our communities, our families, and our country. In my case, my family lives in the city, but I don't want to go there. In the city, you have to buy everything, even food. Here, whatever we grow is ours. We can eat whatever we want, but in the city, you can't. If you don't have money, you have to search for food in garbage cans.
I'd like to add that these families' struggle to survive touches all of us. In 2007, Monsanto employed 18,000 workers in 50 countries. In 2007, its stock prices continue to rise, and its profits have reached $1 billion. Its shareholders include not only pension funds and banks, but also hundreds of thousands of small investors.
Chris Horner.
Hello, Christopher Horner. I'm Marie-Monique Robin from France.
Yeah, we appreciate your persistence in asking, but, you know, we've had several conversations internally about this and have not changed our position, so there's no reason for us to participate. Our suspicion is that it would not be positive. So, you know.
Monsanto refused to grant an interview to the makers of this film. You've been listening to a radio adaptation of The World According to Monsanto, the documentary Americans Won't Ever See by Marie-Monique Robin. This is Unwelcome Guests, and you're tuned to WEOS Geneva, WXXE Fenner Syracuse, 88.1 Ithaca Community Radio, Free Radio Santa Cruz, KRFP Moscow, Free Radio Olympia, KQRP Salida, WGDR Plainfield, KWMD Kasilof Anchorage, WZKW Kingsville, KOWA Olympia, WRFN Nashville, WUOW Oneonta, KRBS Oroville, WKNH Keene, Radio Veronica US, WYQZ Warrenton Bealeton, KSOW Cottage Grove, or WMRW Warren. In an article written a year ago by Dr. Vandana Shiva on the Indian agrarian crisis, she wrote, "Recently, I was visiting Bathinda in Punjab because of an epidemic of farmers' suicides. Punjab used to be the most prosperous agricultural region in India. Today, every farmer is in debt and despair. Vast stretches of land have become waterlogged desert. And, as an old farmer pointed out, even the trees have stopped bearing fruit because heavy use of pesticides has killed the pollinators, the bees, and the butterflies." Close quote. An article published last month in Global Research revealed pesticides used by export-driven agribusiness are threatening migratory songbirds to extinction. It's titled "Globalization: American Songbirds Are Being Wiped Out by Banned Pesticides" by Leonard Doyle. The editor, Michelle Chisadovsky, prefaced the article with this comment. In March, Global Research published an article by Britt Amos on the decline of bee colonies in North America. The author attributes the death of the bees to the extensive use of GMO crops. The article posted below considers a related process. The death of the songbirds resulting from the extensive use of toxic pesticides and chemicals in export agriculture of fruits and vegetables in Latin America. It should be noted that the toxic chemicals and pesticides are distributed by the same biotech conglomerates which produce GMO seeds. Moreover, many of the pesticides and chemicals used in commercial agriculture are applied to sustain the production of specific GMO varieties, including the fruits and vegetables exported out of Latin America. What we're dealing with is the extinction of various forms of animal life, which is directly related to the worldwide control exerted by the biotech companies over farming. Close quote. And the article begins, "The number of migratory songbirds returning to North America has gone into sharp decline due to the unregulated use of highly toxic pesticides and other chemicals across Latin America. Ornithologists blame the demand for out-of-season fruit and vegetables and other crops in North America and Europe for the destruction of tens of millions of passerine birds. By some counts, half of the songbirds that warbled across America's skies only 40 years ago have gone, wiped out by pesticides or loss of habitat. 46 years ago, the naturalist Rachel Carson wrote Silent Spring, a study of the ravages caused to wildlife, especially birds, by DDT. The chemical's use on American farms almost eradicated entire species, including the peregrine falcon and bald eagle. The pesticide was banned and bird numbers recovered, but new and highly toxic pesticides banned by the U.S. and European Union are being widely used in Latin America. Because of the changed consumer habits in Europe and the U.S., export-led agriculture has transformed the wintering grounds of birds into intensive farming operations producing grapes, melons, and bananas, as well as rice for export. Ornithologists say another silent spring is dawning across the U.S. as birds are being poisoned by toxic chemicals or killed as pests in their winter refuges across South and Central America, as well as the Caribbean. They say that many of the species of songbird will never recover, and others may even become endangered or extinct if controls are not put in place or consumer habits changed. More problems await those birds which make it home. Millions of acres of wilderness the birds use as nesting grounds have been plowed under in the desire to grow corn for ethanol for biofuel. Some 150 species of songbirds undertake extraordinary migrations up to 12,000 miles every year as they move from the south to nesting grounds in the U.S. and Canada every spring. Ornithologists say that almost all these species are at risk of poisoning. The migratory songbirds most in trouble include the wood thrush, the Kentucky warbler, the eastern kingbird, and the bobolink, celebrated by 19th century American poet Emily Dickinson as the rowdy of the meadows. Bridget Stutchbury, an ornithologist and professor at York University in Toronto, said, "With spring, we take it for granted that the sound of the songbirds will fill the air with their cheerful songs. But each year, as we continue to demand out-of-season fruits and vegetables, fewer and fewer songbirds will return." The bobolink songbird has experienced such a steep decline, it has almost fallen off the charts. The birds migrate in flocks from Argentina, Bolivia, and Paraguay to the east coast of the U.S., feeding on grain and rice, prompting farmers to regard them as a pest. Bobolink numbers have plummeted almost 50% in the past four decades, according to the North American Breeding Birds Survey. Rosalind Renfrew, a biologist who studied bobolinks as they were feeding in rice paddies in Bolivia, found about half of the birds had been exposed to toxic chemicals banned in Europe and the U.S. Some 40 to 50 species, which include the barn swallow, the wood thrush, and the dick sisal, as well as migratory birds of prey, are starting to disappear. It's only recently that the decline has been definitively linked to the use of toxic pesticides in the Caribbean and across Latin America. "Everyone who has looked for pesticide poisoning in birds has found it," Professor Stutchbury said. "When we count birds during our summers, we are finding significant population declines in about 36 species of songbirds." She wrote in the comment pages of the New York Times, quote, "They are the modern-day canaries in the coal mine," she said. "The imported fruits and vegetables found in our shopping carts in winter and early spring are grown with types and amounts of pesticides that would often be illegal in the United States," close quote. Growers are using high doses of pesticides, which the World Health Organization calls Class 1 toxins. These are also toxic to humans, and are either restricted or banned in the U.S. and EU. But controls in Latin American countries are easily flouted. I believe if we don't make drastic changes, quite literally many birds which are common now are going to become rare, said Professor Stutchbury. Testing by individual EU countries and the U.S. Food and Drug Administration revealed that fruits and vegetables imported from Latin America are 3 times and sometimes 4 times more likely to violate basic standards for pesticide residues. And that article, Globalization, American Songbirds Are Being Wiped Out by Banned Pesticides, by Leonard Doyle, published April 6, 2008 in Global Research. This month's Global Research contains a serial review of F. William Engdahl's book, Seeds of Destruction, on the topic of genetically modified seeds, titled Food is Power, by Stephen Lendman. I'm going to read you a portion of Lendman's lengthy and informative review of the book, a section titled Iraq Gets American Seeds of Democracy. Lendman wrote, "Democracy for Iraq meant erasing the cradle of civilization for unfettered free market capitalism. Iraq was conquered for its oil, but also to make the country a giant free trade paradise. The scheme was diabolical, elaborate, and ugly. Blitzkrieg shock and awe, elaborate psyops, fear as a weapon, repressive occupation, mass detention and torture, and the fastest, most sweeping country remake in history. It happened in weeks. Iraq no longer exists. The country is a wasteland. Its people are devastated, and a blank slate was created for unrestrained corporate pillage on a near unimaginable scale. Part of the scheme was for GMO agribusiness giants to have free rein over that part of the economy, to radically transform Iraq's food production system into a model for GMO seeds and plants. 100 swiftly implemented Bremer laws mandated it, but Iraqis had no say about them, as the country is now governed out of Washington and its branch office inside the heavily fortified Green Zone in the largest U.S. embassy in the world by far. Bremer laws imposed the harshest ever Chicago school-style shock therapy of the kind that devastated countries around the world since first introduced in Chile under Pinochet in 1973. The formula was familiar: mass firings of state employees in the hundreds of thousands, unrestricted imports with no tariffs, duties, inspections, or taxes, deregulation, and the largest state liquidation sale and privatization plan since the Soviet Union collapsed. Corporate taxes were lowered as well, from 40% to a flat 15%, and foreign investors could own 100% of Iraqi assets other than oil. They could also repatriate all their profits, had no obligation to reinvest in the country, and wouldn't be taxed. They were further given 40-year leases, and the only Saddam-era laws remaining were those restricting trade unions and collective bargaining. Foreign transnationals, mainly U.S. ones, swooped in and devoured everything. Iraqis couldn't compete, and the occupation laws assured it. Consider Bremer Order 81. It covered patents, their duration, and stated, quote, "Farmers shall be prohibited from reusing seeds of protected varieties or any variety the edict covered." It gave plant variety patent holders absolute rights over farmers using their seeds for 20 years. They'd be genetically engineered, owned by transnationals, and Iraqi farmers using them had to sign an agreement stipulating they'll pay a technology fee, as well as an annual license fee. Plant Variety Protection, PVP, was the core of this order. It made seed saving and reuse illegal. Even using similar seeds could result in severe fines and imprisonment. GMO seeds got protection to displace 10,000 years of developed plant varieties being sacrificed. Iraq's fertile valley between the Tigris and the Euphrates rivers is ideal for crop planting. Since 8,000 BC, farmers used it to develop rich seeds of almost every variety of wheat used in the world today. They were erased through a GMO modernization and industrialization scheme, so agribusiness can get a foothold in the region and supply the world market. While Iraqis suffer and starve, GMO giants run the country's agriculture for export. Iraqi farmers are now agribusiness serfs and are forced to grow products foreign to the native diet like wheat designed for pasta. Bremer laws mandated it and are inviolable under Article 26 of the U.S. drafted Constitution. It states that the Iraqi government is powerless to change laws a foreign occupier made. To assure it, U.S. sympathizers are in every ministry with those most trusted in the key ones. Engdahl sums up the damage to agriculture, quote, "The forced transformation of Iraq's food production into patented GMO crops is one of the clearest examples of how Monsanto and other GMO giants are forcing these crops onto an unwilling or unknowing world population," close quote. "They're infesting the planet with them one country at a time, so it's futile trying to undo the damage they cause." That an excerpt from a book review of F. William Engdahl's Seeds of Destruction. The review, a lengthy three-part series, is entitled Unleashing GMO Seeds, Food is Power, by Stephen Lenman, published serially in Global Research magazine at globalresearch.ca. So, what can we collectively and individually do about this? We can become involved in growing and eating organic and preferably local organic food. Pass local ordinances supporting the rights of nature and removing corporate rights, as some of our guests discussed in programs in the past few weeks. Demand support for the development and expansion of organic farming. One of the main purposes of organic farming is to build the soil. An organic farm actually makes the land it's on better. And better soil means tastier and more nutritious food for us. If any company was a candidate for a divestment campaign, that is Monsanto. If your pension plan or 401k plan uses your money to buy stock in Monsanto, make them stop. For decades, the Monsanto Corporation has made war on the world in their quest for profits. It's time to fight back.
That far horizon, where everything alive is privatized, and every seed of pay, we got the soil, we got the lawyers, the politicians in our pockets, all the way to president, so press some TV, to guarantee the cooperation of your nation, and I knew it's there, and that you did not choose it, but you'll have to use it. We'll get our Roundup Ready fingerprint in every pie you eat with a big mutant. Be a bit more blatant. Tell a corporation's domination of your global be complete. Mr. Monsanto, Monster Mutanto, we're turning Satan into Samson. Give everybody cancer coming through now. We're changing you now. Another nature terminators, hell on earth creators, gene manipulators, biotech dictators. The future's gone. Food and health and hope.